tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 7th of July, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I was away yesterday, so that was why we didn't have a Daily Nationalist recorded yesterday. We had a pre-recorded one, and that was because I was at the Patriotic Alternative Family Festival, which was absolutely excellent. We had live music there, finally, electrical amplified live music there. We had four or five different collections of musicians playing on a stage in a tent. We had the PA Wales Laser there as well. We had a laser show, lots of kids there. The weather wasn't very good. In fact, the weather was pretty much atrocious, but it didn't really affect the atmosphere at all, because we had this huge dry tent which everyone could get inside, and if the weather's bad outside, then people are more likely to come inside and see the bands playing. I mean, it was the first time at a Patriotic Alternative summer camp that they've actually had live bands there, proper live bands. You know, there's been musicians there before, but not actual bands. So it just shows that Patriotic Alternative is continuing to evolve and continuing to grow, and I dare say next year's one will be even better. And there was a stream from Mark Collette afterwards. I think we'll be having that on the radioalbion.com site on Wednesday. And of course, if people want to get involved with Patriotic Alternative, just drop an email to the website. You can find the website at patrioticalternative.org.uk. And there are various regional groups. You can join them, and then you can get involved in the cultural activities that go on every month. Every week, pretty much, there's something that goes on in one of the Patriotic Alternative regions, whether it's a protest or whether it's a hike or going out camping or going out to look at museums or part of our cultural heritage. There is always an activity that is going on. So you can go to these activities and you can get to meet up with other nationalists and form networks and form communities, offline communities. It's definitely worth doing. Anyway, now that's out of the way, let's get into what's been happening in the news. And one of the main news stories at the moment seems to be this censorship, an increasing censorship in Britain. We've already have the Online Safety Act, we already have the EU Digital Harms Bill, but that's not enough. It's not enough for the British government. They want even more censorship. And I talked about this a little bit a week before last, I think, about how what they're going to do is they're going to try, well, they're going to basically force social media companies to change the algorithm so that it promotes the BBC and Channel 4 and other left-wing sources to the top, and limits the reach of independent creators. And of course, platforms like YouTube and social media, it's all about the independent creator. It's all about empowering the independent creator to make their own content. And if it's good, then people will watch it. So it really undermines the whole purpose of a social media site to force them to promote the legacy media on there. And this isn't something that's just being talked about. This is definitely coming. And the first article I've got here is about YouTube warning its creators about what will happen because of this. YouTube warns independent UK creators of impending censorship push from Labour government. American video sharing platform YouTube told users in Britain that under pressure from the left-wing Labour Party government, independent creators will likely see their content suppressed. So you think people have set up their channel, they've spent a long time creating the channel, cultivating an audience, they're earning money from it, they're, it's like a business to them, and the Labour Party is just going to take that away from them. Because they don't want people to see independent content, I guess. The British government has been accused of attempting to silence political opposition, and that is exactly what is going on here, with YouTube telling UK creators that proposed new rules would include a prominence regime that would force sites like YouTube to give a privileged position to the BBC, ITV, Channel 4 and other legacy media. I mean, to be honest, YouTube should be giving a privileged position to the independent creators that made the channel, that made it so popular, the most popular ones. They're the ones that should have a privileged position, not the competitors. I mean, these are YouTube's competitors, are the legacy media channels. When YouTube first came out, it was competing against the BBC and ITV. And what the government are doing now is they're going to force YouTube to promote the BBC and ITV. So it completely undermines the whole purpose of YouTube and social media. The notice said that artificially propping up establishment media would naturally result in independent media being downranked and obscured from view, as pushing this group forward means pushing everyone else downwards. Mandatory prioritisation of broadcasters would affect how your content reaches your audience, regardless of what your audience actually wants to see. And this is what's so wrong with this. People know what they want to see. They type it into their search result, their search engine, what they want to actually see. They type it into the browser. And what the UK government are saying is, well, don't give them what they're searching for. Give them what we want them to see. I mean, it really is an admission that all of this content that the mainstream media actually puts out is just propaganda. It's trying to force people to have the same opinion as the government. And if you dare to have a different opinion and use old-fashioned language when you express that opinion, you can be jailed for your opinion, just as I was. Mandating prominence for established media networks would push the UK's diverse mix of independent journalists, educators and digital-first businesses down the line, YouTube added. So all this talk about the promotion of diversity, and what this is actually going to do is going to get rid of the diversity that is there on social media. Creators were also told that this would impact their ability to grow their communities, generate views, and ultimately earn money as a business. So this is going to directly harm people's YouTube businesses. The government is said to have told the site that legacy broadcasters had the trust of the state to provide accurate reporting, which YouTube noted implies that digital first voices are less credible, damaging the foundational trust that sustains the creator economy. And let's just think about this. So the digital-first voices are less credible. So the eyewitness video accounts that we see on Twitter, they are less credible than when we see the BBC voiceover and we're not allowed to actually see the eyewitness content. I mean, this just isn't true, is it, that digital-first voices are less credible? The eyewitness account is always the most credible, especially if you can actually see the video of what the eyewitness is recording for you. Take, for instance, the recent attempted beheading of a white man in Belfast by a Sudanese migrant. You could see what was happening there. The government were furious about that, that people could actually see what was happening. They wanted to hide it. And if it wasn't for the video showing us this, they probably would have just said Belfast man in knife incident without actually telling us the severity of what actually went on there. So the eyewitness account there, the video account that was put online, how can you say that that's not credible? It's an eyewitness account. And it's specifically these eyewitness accounts that the British government are so concerned about. This comes despite the BBC recently facing significant scandals involving the accuracy of its reporting. including last year when it was forced to apologise to US President Trump after a documentary produced by the public broadcaster deceptively spliced together different sections of his speech on January 6, 2021, to falsely give the impression that he had encouraged supporters to riot when he did the exact opposite. And that in itself should mean that the BBC no longer has any credibility whatsoever, because that Panorama documentary was around for about a year before they finally admitted that it was faked. And people that had seen the actual speeches, they knew that this was faked, but a lot of people that hadn't seen the actual speech itself believed that Donald Trump was encouraging people to go to the Capitol and riot, which of course he wasn't. He said to peacefully protest. Just last month, the BBC was also forced to issue an apology to Brexit leader Nigel Farage after one of its presenters fabricated fictitious quotes from the Reform UK leader in the wake of the killing of handcuffed teen Henry Novak. And Nigel Farage said they're cold, hard rage. And the BBC reported that as red-hot rage. Cold, hard rage is cold. It's not hot. It's not hot-headed. It's not going out and doing silly things. But the BBC claimed he said the opposite of that. So how can the UK government be saying that these sources are trusted sources when they cannot be trusted to tell the truth? Commenting on the notice from YouTube, Mr. Farage said, "Look at this appalling state censorship. Labour now wants to seize control of YouTube's algorithm. They want YouTube to artificially boost the BBC and Channel 4's content and suffocate independent journalists and producers. The BBC has been biased to pro-mass migration, open borders and net zero views these past few decades. It is part of the reason we are in a mess. The BBC's own internal reports admit and document some of this bias. People have moved to X and YouTube in part as a response to it. And now Labour wants to control what they see there. Reform will scrap this heavy-handed lunacy." And I would like to think that they would do that. I would like to see a specific policy saying that they will do this. I think they said they're going to undo the Online Safety Act, possibly undo the Equality Act. Restore said that they're going to undo the Public Order Act as well. That's the one that I was prosecuted under. But if we see a direct plan from Reform to undo this, and also to undo this social media ban for under 16s, I think you could end up with a lot of these 16 to 21-year-olds voting for Reform and Restore, because they've now been given the vote in Scotland, England and Wales. So if Reform play to that and say, look, we're going to undo this, we're going to undo the censorship, then I can see that they would probably get the support of the young voters. The director of the Free Speech Union, Lord Young of Acton, remarked that if legacy outlets were trusted by the public, the government would not have to force them to watch their content. I mean, it does rather damage the credibility of saying that these are trusted media companies when the public clearly don't want to watch them. If they were trusted, they would watch them of their own choice, wouldn't they? They wouldn't have to be forced to by the British government. The reason the BBC now attracts fewer viewers than YouTube is precisely because people don't trust it. And with good reason, given the misinformation it pumps out about the Israel-Gaza conflict. And of course, Tony Young is a pro-Zionist. That's why he puts that in there. And that's why he's Lord Toby Young of Acton as well, is because he supports Israel. If he was anti-Israel, if he was talked about Jewish control of the media, then I don't think he would have been given his lordship title at all. Again, that is just my opinion. But he does bring up this Israel-Gaza conflict. And people, when they do that, it's usually because they are Zionist. It's fake news Panorama documentary about Trump and its one-sided coverage of the climate crisis, forcing social media platforms to label it trustworthy, is unlikely to restore its authority. More like be the final nail. And I agree that it'd be more like the final nail in the coffin. The fact that they're having to force the social media companies to do this just shows that the BBC and Channel 4 and ITV, they're not trusted at all. That's why people have moved over to social media. Well, this promotion of so-called trusted sources, this is only one part of this. And I'm just amazed, really, that they've only just brought this Online Safety Act through last year. And they're already bringing in other forms of censorship. It's not good enough for them. I mean, the Online Safety Act is horrific enough. It's horrendous enough that social media companies have to take down content, not because it's illegal, but because the Home Secretary says she doesn't want the public to see it. I mean, that is just naked censorship. And to say that that's not enough, we have to have more, is scandalous. It's shocking to me to see that. Well, the second article we have here, UK Labour Party looks to impose election restrictions on social media to combat, quote, misinformation. The ruling leftist Labour Party in Britain has suggested that social media sites should face new restrictions during elections, as the government claims it wants to confront the spread of so-called misinformation. And as I pointed out earlier, how can you call eyewitness reports misinformation? If somebody has recorded something happening on their video and they upload it to social media, it's not misinformation, is it? It's an eyewitness account. Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, went on a media blitz on Sunday, advocating for the Representation of the People Bill to further clamp down on social media, particularly around elections. So as I say, the Online Safety Act, that's not good enough. They're now bringing in this other one, this new one, Representation of the People Bill. Powell is a close ally of Britain's likely next Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, the former Mayor of Manchester, who recently parachuted into the House of Commons following outgoing Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer's disastrous performance at May's local elections. Speaking to LBC, she said, "Millions of people get their news from social media, yet our laws have not kept pace." Laws? What do laws have to do with eyewitness accounts? "The biggest influence on what many voters see during election campaign is not a TV news bulletin. It is social media feeds decided by opaque algorithms, where falsehoods, deepfakes and coordinated mis- and disinformation can spread at alarming speed with real-world consequences," Powell asserted. Well, the algorithms aren't really opaque, are they? They just give you what you want to see. They can analyse what it is that you're watching and the sort of things that you choose to watch. And then they find other content that has the same tags with it. I mean, it's quite simple. It's not opaque. It's not hard to understand how these algorithms work. They just feed people with the content that they've worked out that that person wants to see. So what they're saying here is that this is false information. This is wrong somehow. And falsehoods, deepfakes and coordinated disinformation can spread. Well, I mean, it's the same as a conversation, isn't it? In the pub, you have a conversation in a pub and somebody says one thing to you. You don't know whether it's true, might be true, might not be true, might just be gossip, might be exaggeration. It's just the way that things are. And we learn to be careful and we learn to be discerning when we hear these sorts of things to work out whether something is truthful or not. And that's part of growing up. It's part of becoming an adult, is learning these things. So for the government to say, well, we can't trust the public with that, we just have to keep a tight limit on what the public can actually see, is as if they were doing the same in a conversation in the pub and preventing people from talking in a pub. Imagine if you went in the pub and the only people you could talk to were government-approved people in the pub. People would stop going in the pub, wouldn't they? Which they pretty much have done anyway. The Deputy Labour leader said that while freedom of expression is fundamental to British democracy, it is important that the government make sure that the public can make informed choices based on accurate information. Well, I would say the informed choice is social media with all the content that's on there. I mean, the more choice there is, the better it is, and the better your nonsense detector is going to be, and the better you're going to be at working out what's truthful and what is not truthful. And freedom of expression and freedom of speech is fundamental to democracy. And yet what this is doing is it's taking away freedom of expression and it's taking away freedom of speech. Powell's proposal would extend some of the restrictions currently on British broadcasters during the immediate run-up to elections, also known as PIRDA. This includes a blanket ban on media reporting on election issues on polling day until after the polls have closed. Broadcasters are also required to give equal time to candidates to ensure an even playing field. And just think about that on social media. You want to promote the political party that you support, so you're doing your best to promote them. And what the social media is saying, oh, no, we can't have that. That's not giving equal time to all these other candidates. We can't have your content up there because you're not promoting this other political party. And it really shows the difference between mainstream media and social media. I mean, with the mainstream media, you would have to do this because mainstream media has such a large reach, effectively. And if you want to ensure that people have a fair crack of the whip, so to say, then you're going to have to have these rules with the mainstream media. But as far as social media is concerned, I mean, these are people's individual comments, people's individual pages and what they're saying on there. And you can't say that these individuals who perhaps they might support reform, you can't say to them, oh, you're going to have to put up lots of content that's pro-Labour if you want to put up content that's pro-reform, because they support reform. Again, this goes completely against freedom of expression. They really talk out both sides of their mouths, don't they? They talk about we need to support freedom of expression at the same time as removing freedom of expression. You have Keir Starmer talking about how Britain is so proud of its history of free speech when we have no free speech in this country and people are locked up for using abbreviations and out-of-date English. It comes in the wake of UK Culture Secretary announcing last week that she would be quitting Elon Musk's X social media platform and that the government department she runs would do the same. Nandy said that X was a platform originally designed for free speech and expression, now favours abuse and misinformation over meaningful debate. And of course it doesn't. It doesn't actually allow free speech. It still gets rid of people on there that are activists in the real world. I mean, White Vanguard, I think they've just been removed from X. Mike Enoch, and when he was doing the National Justice Party in America, they were all removed from X. Mark Collette is not allowed on X. Laura Towle is not allowed on X. Patriotic Alternative are not allowed to put their links up on X. So you can hardly say that X is really free speech now, but it is much better than it was. And what you actually get on there now is meaningful debate. And you will actually get to hear different points of view on there. You'll get to hear people from the left and you'll get to hear people from the right. Lisa Nandy clearly cannot handle having her views critiqued by people on the right. She doesn't actually know what free speech is. If she thinks that Twitter used to have free speech and expression when it just used to ban anybody that was critical of Joe Biden, anybody that was critical of the COVID scam when that was going on, if she thinks that that was free speech, she really doesn't understand what free speech is, which she's not a particularly bright person anyway. However, now she claims that the social media firm isn't healthy for our democracy or our communities, and I don't want to support it. Well, the whole point in Elon Musk buying it is because he thought it would be healthy for our democracy to have a marketplace of ideas where people could discuss these things and the most popular ideas would rise to the top. That's what democracy is supposed to be. It's supposed to be government of the people, by the people. And if the people wish to support something, it will get views, won't it? The most people that look at something, that's democracy. That should go to the top. When you look at a search engine and you type in what it is that you're looking for, you want to, with the answers that you get, you want them to be the most upvoted answers. So the internet was originally very democratic. I think X was, or Twitter was quite democratic at first. And then after the first election of Donald Trump in 2017, there was this massive push to break the internet, effectively. They broke the search engines. They stopped putting the most popular results at the top of the rankings. They broke all, they broke YouTube, they broke Twitter, they broke Facebook, they broke all of these social media sites and did everything to prevent them from actually promoting free speech. Things have changed a little bit now. It's moved back the other way. But the way that they were from 2017 onwards was certainly not free speech. It was just promoting left-wing views. And I don't think the social media promotes right-wing views now. I think they just promote a conversation. It's like GB News. They're a right-wing channel, but they interview people from the left on there, and they don't interrupt them. They don't cut them off. They let them say what it is they want to say, and then they have somebody with a right-wing view on there. To me, that's much better than just promoting one point of view. And the left have always said, well, we should allow these people to speak, we should debate with them, because we can show how false their ideas are. And that's what you should have. I mean, it's a logical argument. We could say the same about the left. Well, we want people to hear what the left have to say so that we can expose how false their ideas are. So it works whether you're on the right or the left. And that's why you have free speech. But what the Labour Party are trying to do here, and what the Conservative Party have done before them, is to remove that. They don't want there to be a debate. They want a false debate like there is on the mainstream media, where you will never see any of these mainstream politicians genuinely grilled over anything. And you'll never see anybody questioning the mainstream sort of dogma of the government, such as diversity, pro-diversity, pro-abortion, pro-feminism. You'll never see them challenged on any of that, because it's just false challenges that they're given. Effectively all on the same side, so they're not going to really give them a harsh interview in the same way that they might give somebody from the so-called far right a particularly harsh interview. Nandi said that she would continue posting on Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn. Meanwhile, the video hosting platform YouTube warned British users over the weekend that their content likely faces the prospect of being suppressed algorithmically under new rules proposed by the left-wing government. According to reports, the government is looking to require social media firms to prioritise so-called trusted news sources like the BBC over independent media. Despite long-standing accusations of bias against the UK public broadcaster and significant scandals over the accuracy of its reporting, mandating preeminence for established media networks would push the UK's diverse mix of independent journalists, educators, and digital-first businesses down the line, YouTube said. And that takes us back to that first story there. I mean, and this is, it's harmful for the independent content creators. It's harmful for people that see something shocking and they record it and they upload it. Because as we saw that happened with what happened in Belfast, and we saw what Sinn Féin was saying, they were more angry at Elon Musk than they were at the guy that did the beheading. And they were saying, well, he should have been banned from showing people this eyewitness account. And that was the same attitude of the people in Westminster as well. They wanted to prevent Twitter from showing people this heinous act. And of course, that was just one heinous act of many that we see on X all the time. You see these eyewitness videos. And this is what's really sort of pushing forward the reaction against the mainstream politicians and the mainstream media, is because of these social media sites, people can actually see what is going on. That's what is causing this pushback. And it's a good thing. I mean, why should we not see what has been going on? Clearly, these sorts of things have been going on for years. But before we had social media, people weren't videoing it. And you would hear about these things, but there wasn't any evidence for them. Now we have good, strong, hard evidence of what is actually going on in the country. And instead of addressing that, instead of addressing all of these problems, they just want to prevent people from seeing these problems. They just want to make it so that people can't actually see what's going on, the eyewitness accounts. I mean, it's really quite sinister when you think about it, that the British government does not want the British people to know what is actually going on in the British streets. Anyway, that brings us to the end of today's episode. I'll just take us back to what I was talking about at the beginning there, because I forgot to mention some of the people that I met at the festival as well. nice guy called Matt. He was the guy that did the interview with me when I had just been found guilty of hate speech back in 2023. He was there. It was good to see him. It's good to see Pale Elephant there once again. Met a couple of young ladies there. One of them was very complimentary about myself and about Grandpa Dan. And, of course, lots of other people that I met. One of the best things about it was that you could just literally sit down anywhere and you would get a warm welcome and you'd have good conversation with people because it was a very high quality of person that was actually there. That's the best thing about Patriotic Alternative is the quality of its members. They're all dedicated, decent people. And you can cross regions. I mean, I've done things with West Midlands region, Southwest region, and they're decent people, the same as they are in the PA Wales region. So you don't have to have any worries that, oh, I don't know what the other groups are going to be like in the country. They're all decent people. And also a shout out to the people that I met from the Southwest region there. One of them gave me a can of beer after I finished playing the drums on Saturday night. That was I was very grateful for. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.